Power Hour is back. Alan Myers here, sitting in, keeping the mic warm with my wonderful guest, Philip Goodrich. Philip, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm having a good time. Appreciate the opportunity to be on your program.
Oh, this is great. And I want callers to know, we do have a call-in number if you're interested, 844-769-2944. I got to keep remembering to say that. And thanks to the Power Mall. You can find them at thepowermall.com. Because when you buy from them, you buy from the good guys. Anyway, we will continue on talking about your book, Somerset, or Why and How Benjamin Franklin Orchestrated the American Revolution. This has just been a great, for me, and I hope the audience, this great education on this one little aspect in our history that without all the work you've put in, Philip, wouldn't be known. And we're going to be getting to, it's like this little pebble drops into a pond and then out goes all the waves, all the ripples. And it goes everywhere. And looking at the little pebble before it hits the pond, you think, what kind of impact could that have? I think we're about to find out. Anyway, we left off with the decision being made. Somerset is freed, and if I remember correctly, within 6 months, thousands of slaves had been freed in London by their owners, former owners. Please continue.
Sure. So going back to the American colonies at that time, then this is why I've got to backtrack, and this is why the book is constructed the way it is, because we have to go back with Benjamin Franklin himself. It's important for the readers to recall that Benjamin Franklin is actually at least 15 years older than anybody else referred to as a founding father at the time of the American Revolution. By the time of the Revolution, Franklin is already well into his 60s. And it will turn 70 during the course of the American Revolution. And by that standard, he was a very old man. And I can tell you from that point of view, from that vantage point, that when you reach a certain age, there is a great deal of urgency going on in your life as to what do I still want to accomplish. The one dream that Franklin had held throughout the second half of his life was to establish a peaceful Pennsylvania. You have to remember that Franklin had been through not only one war between France and Great Britain, the French and Indian War, of which we are all familiar, but 10 years before that, he had been involved with the King George's War, which is kind of forgotten in American history, but it did take place in part in the United States, in western Pennsylvania and western Virginia, as well as northern New York and western Massachusetts. And these were incursions by the French with indigenous tribes of Native Americans attacking British settlers with all sorts of atrocities on both sides. And it was during that war that Franklin felt that the safety of Philadelphia itself was at risk. So when you heap onto that the French and Indian War within 10 years, that was when Franklin decided that he had to separate Pennsylvania from the people that owned it in order to assure its safety. Because the people that owned Pennsylvania lived in London, and they really didn't care about the French and the indigenous people attacking their settlers. All they cared about was extracting profits. So it became Franklin's lifelong aim to separate Pennsylvania from the Penn family. So he went to London to try to do this, and wiser friends of his in London, his British friends, who were his closest friends, advised him there was no way to do this for Pennsylvania by itself. He was going to have to involve as many colonies as possible if he ever wanted this to be successful. So Franklin proceeded to enlist the other 12 colonies in a joint effort to try to establish peace and independence for the British colonies of North America. In trying to achieve this, then, he was told that the British weren't interested in just releasing the colonies. They were happy with the status quo. It was their number one trading partner. And if Mr. Franklin was upset with it, he was just going to have to accept it and live with it. Well, the one thing we know about Benjamin Franklin is he was unrelenting in a goal. If he perceived that there was something he wanted to achieve, he was going to achieve it. And he wasn't going to be willing to listen to anybody tell him otherwise. And so at that point, he talks to, of all people, the members of the Scottish Enlightenment. And these were philosophers, some names of which you may recognize. David Hume was considered the greatest political philosopher of the 18th century. Adam Smith is perhaps better known because he wrote the book Wealth of Nations, which introduced the concept of international and global economy. But both of these were young proteges of a dear friend of Benjamin Franklin, Lord Combes, in Edinburgh. And Franklin goes twice to Edinburgh to talk with the members of the Scottish Enlightenment about how do you successfully wage a revolution. And, of course, they assumed this was a hypothetical discussion. They didn't realize that Franklin was taking intense notes and writing a blueprint. So they kind of gave him some ideas, and they told him that he needed motivating factors. Well, we know that taxation without representation was certainly an irritating issue for the people of Boston and, to a lesser degree, the people of New York. But nobody between Delaware and Georgia was talking about taxation issues. They were loyalists. They didn't have a problem with taxation. So the Scottish Enlightenment members assured Franklin that he was going to come up with a completely different motivation if he wanted those southern colonies to get involved in his little project. And kicking it around, Franklin and the members of the Scottish Enlightenment said, what about their chattel slaves? What would happen if they were deprived of their slaves? How would they respond? That would take away their income, their economy. It would take away their homes. It would take away their families. It might cost them their lives. And Franklin realized that's the issue. That's what we've got to do. We've got to at least create a threat of abolition from the side of London in order to get the attention of the colonies from Delaware to Georgia. And now you start to understand the significance of the Somerset decision for Franklin. There's his trigger for those southern colonies.
Great history. Some questions come into my head. Part of this, I start thinking about, okay, he's in London. He travels overland, gets on a boat. Scotland. I'm sorry. He just goes up to, I think in Ireland. He travels all that way.
He probably went by boat, though, even to Edinburgh, yes.
Okay. But, I mean, this is days or weeks just in travel. And, yes. I mean, just thinking about you don't get in a car and drive down the freeway. You get in a buggy or something. So there's that. Then, you know, the fact that they're able to somehow know each other, communicate. But back to the colonies at the time, what I'm getting is the northern ones didn't like taxation and possibly were more or much less loyalists. There were some, of course. And then in the southern states that had the large slave populations, they were more loyalists?
Very much so.
Do you have any information on why they would care less about taxation than the northern colonies?
It didn't involve them so much directly. They were more involved in raw goods, whereas the northern colonies were where the books were being published, the cards were being printed, all the big printing houses were in the north, in Boston and New York and Philadelphia, so that's where the Stamp Act really hit them. They had the density of population there because, my goodness gracious, if you think that Americans drink tea today, it was nothing like the drinking of tea in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia in the 18th century. That was three or four meals a day, where tea was the liquid being drunk at the time.
Wow.
So things like tea taxes and stamp taxes, import taxes, export taxes, all those things were bothering the major shipping ports. And the major shipping ports were Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. So as a result, they are constantly at odds with Great Britain over these issues. And Great Britain, over and over and over again, is asserting their authority over the colonists. They said the one thing that they want the colonists to understand is they have the right to tax, even if they take the taxes away. The stamp tax, oddly enough, only lasted for a year. And there was so much uproar over it that they repealed it. But they said, but we want the American colonies to understand that they are second-class Brits. The American colonists, including Benjamin Franklin, asserted that they had the rights of British colonists, or the rights of British people for representation in Parliament. And Parliament just laughed at them. No, you don't. You most assuredly do not have the right to representation. You are a colonist, and that's all you are ever going to be. So there was already this discord.
Yeah, think about that for a minute. You're in a British colony, surrounded by British colonies. You owe some allegiance to a monarch on an island far away. And there's supposed to be these rules of law and parliament and on and on and on. And it's kind of interesting that the colonists, in a way, you know, got brought up short by saying, you're second class, and I don't care that you don't like it.
Yes, and that is precisely what they were told. And they were told that based on the royal governor of Massachusetts, a man named Thomas Hutchinson. Hutchinson and his lieutenant governor wrote letters back to London talking about the violence going on in Boston against British subjects. Both Hutchinson's house and the lieutenant governor's house were ransacked by rioters in Boston in 1767 on the heels of the Townsend Act. She had another tax made by Parliament against the people of Boston. And ultimately, then, the British decided that they were going to send the military to keep order. And they were quartering the military. You know, what that means is they would send British soldiers into the residential neighborhoods of Boston, and they could knock on a door and say, okay, four soldiers are going to sleep in your bed, and you guys can sleep in the kitchen. And they would just do this randomly, and they believed that because the Bostonians were second-class citizens, they had to allow this. It was a concept called quartering, the quartering of soldiers in your house. And they started targeting the Patriots' homes. They knew who the rabble-rousers were, and they would go to their homes and say, okay, four soldiers are going to live in your house and listen to all your conversations and watch where you go day after day, and you're going to like it. So you can see where this is headed, and it comes to a head in March of 1770 with an incident that we know today as the Boston Massacre.
Right. Just a couple side notes. What you're speaking about tells me this is why we got the Third Amendment to the Constitution.
Exactly.
Which is
fresh in the minds of all the East Coast people.
Yeah. And the Third Amendment being no soldier. What's interesting about reading the Constitution for me in part, is that when a common noun begins with a capital letter, you know that they're letting you know, the writers are letting you know this is an important word, because they didn't have bold, they didn't have italics, they didn't have underline. So no soldier, soldier is a capital S, shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, capital O, nor in the time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Yeah, they didn't like that.
They went ballistic over that. And unbeknownst to the Bostonians at that time, they did not realize that it was their royal governor and lieutenant governor that had asked the British to send the military to live in Boston. They had called for the British military to quarter their soldiers there.
That is one last interjection, and then I want to get to what you're, where you're going on these letters. Again, going back in time, just a moment, going back to 1760, there is a man by the name of James Otis. He was legal representation for the crown, and what finally ticked him off completely was he couldn't stand what was called writ of assistance, which is basically a general search warrant. And a writ of assistance would allow somebody legally to go to any place, any business, any home, because it had no address, no person, no thing. It is an absolutely total general search warrant. And these were being implemented by the British because they didn't like the smuggling. Because I think by that time the British were saying you can't buy anything from anybody but from us, you second class British people. And a 5-hour rant in a court, he basically let them have it and he quit. And this is when I first learned about writ of assistance. What's interesting, this was 1760, and one young man was in that audience listening. His name is John Adams.
Yes.
So, I mean, there was so much going on. But back to the Hutchinson letters and the quartering by the British, this is, again, pivotal to what is getting the American Revolution set up. Please continue. Oh, by the way, we got, like, 4 minutes left, so you keep talking and I'll just jump.
Yeah, I'll wind this up. So James Otis, one of his proteges, as you've indicated, was John Adams, also his second cousin, a young man named Samuel Adams. But at any rate, this all comes to a head then when these letters that were mailed back to the British military figures in London, those letters are gathered together by Benjamin Franklin's best friend in London, a man named Thomas Pownall, who was also at one time a royal governor of Massachusetts. And he quietly steals these letters and hands them to Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin very quietly, after the Somerset decision, leaks it to the Boston Press. The Boston Press runs it in their newspapers in the fall of 1773, and at that time the British decide that they're going to restart the tea tax and direct it right at Boston. Ships show up in Boston Harbor in December of 1773, and a riot mob shows up at the harbor, and Samuel Adams is trying to get them to calm down, and they don't care, and they push past him, and they board the ships, and they throw all the tea into the Boston Harbor, and that is what you know as the Boston Tea Party. As a result, Boston is shut down by the British government. They shut the harbor completely. And at that point, all the colonies from Pennsylvania to New Hampshire are ready for war. Meanwhile, Lord Dunmore in Virginia is telling any slaves that want to listen that not only can they defect to the British military, but if they do so, the British military will supply them with weapons and will direct them back to their plantations to free their families and to kill their masters. So this has all come to a head in 1775, almost simultaneously through the exhortations of none other than Benjamin Franklin.
It's interesting that, and this has been brought up before, in that we enslaved you, but if you do what you want, what we want you to do now, we'll free you.
Exactly.
And the it just shows that, you know, this is a huge power play. One is for control and the other is for freedom. Not always viewed as a complete freedom that I would see, but there's just all these great stories. I'm so glad you're able to share them. So now we have the Hutchinson letters. I have a question regarding them in the next 2 minutes we have. So the Hutchinson letters are leaked to the British press. I'm amazed that they print them, but they do.
They leaked to the American press in Boston, and they
also
are more than happy to print them.
Right. But, okay, if you put them on a boat to go from London to the East Coast, how long does that take?
Anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months, depending on the ship and time of year, et cetera.
Right. So it's
why the responses tend to feel like they're slow in real time.
Yeah, because it takes so long. So when did Benjamin Franklin send them to the colonies? Do you know?
Yes, he leaked them in November of 1773 after he was sure that the southern colonies were creating committees of correspondence to argue in favor of revolution. That was the response to the Somerset decision, and that assured Benjamin Franklin that the southern colonies were willing to talk. And
wow.
Once he had that, he said, okay, now it's time to get Massachusetts, New York, and all of New England fired up. And so that's
excellent.
When he leaks it. He leaks it in November of 1773.
Thank you for that. All right, we're coming to our bottom of the hour break. This is the Power Hour. We'll be right back after these very important messages. Stay with us.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. When talking of great immune support, a line of products comes to my mind. That's North American Urban Spice. We carry the Resvital Calf, Sinuoraga, Oreganol Juice, Pure Leafy, Chagamax, Collagen Power Plus, Oregarest, Super Strength Oregano Oil, Black Seed, and many more. Support small businesses when you buy from the good guys. go to thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We are back. The Power Hour. Alan Meyer sitting in, keeping the mic warm. Got Philip Goodrich sharing his stories on his wonderful, wonderful book. You got to get it. Somerset, or Why and How Benjamin Franklin Orchestrated the American Revolution. This is such incredible, deep history. Philip, thank you for the countless hours it took to gather this information and write it. And before I forget, we got a call-in number, 844-769-2944. 844-769-2944. Love to hear from you. Philip, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we left off with the Hutchinson letters being leaked to the British press, being leaked to the colony press. And these, to me, what I'm learning is they are so important because you have a British supporter, governor of a colony telling the monarchy, send your troops. This probably didn't sit well with those who weren't already thrilled with the monarchy. That be true?
That's absolutely true. You might consider it along the lines of sending in the National Guard in our own United States over the last 50 years. Calls for the National Guard usually don't go over well with those who are the source of being called to send the National Guard.
Right.
So, essentially, the Boston Patriots of that time were highly resentful of the fact that their own royal governor who actually was born in Boston, had actually sent for the British military to come and suppress their rights. And that's exactly what the letter said. He said, we need to abridge the rights of these people because they think that they're British citizens, and they clearly are not. So that was enough to inflame the northern colonies. It had nothing to do with taxation. It had to do with the quartering of soldiers and the presence of British military in the streets of Boston and New York. That's what drove the Patriots to the edge.
But think about that. I'm thinking about it. You have your royal governor, who now I just learned it is, you know, was not born in England, was born local, but totally a loyalist, and he is asking for the monarchy's support to infringe on, abridge the rights of the people in the colonies, locally at least, because they're not really British citizens anyway. I mean, if there was ever a slap in the face, that it's just an amazing turn of events. While we were off air, just because you made a comment, I'd like you to share it with him. I had brought up James Otis, which you're familiar with. But what did you say about James Otis as it related to John and Samuel Adams?
Well, yeah, I think it's unfortunate that many readers today don't even recognize the name James Otis. But James Otis was truly the spiritual father of the Sons of Liberty in Boston. Samuel and John Adams were young men who were taken on under the wing of James Otis, and he was telling them what rights they should be entitled to and what rights they were being deprived of. And he was really the one that was fueling the fire that stirred up both Samuel and John Adams over the course of the ensuing 10 years.
Yeah, again, another tidbit of history, so important to what happened, and yet we don't even know his name. Last thing on James Otis that I know about, he had some troubles, people didn't like him. He eventually was spending the remainder of his life on somebody else's farm. He wasn't working anymore. And he had quite this spectacular exit from this life. He walked out of the farmhouse that he was living in, and he was, God rest his soul, struck by lightning. That is one dramatic way to leave the scene. That is James Otis. So let's continue. We've got the Hutchinson letters, which, well, to me, you know, this, of course, absolutely ticks off those in Boston and elsewhere. You have the Somerset case. Bring them together.
Yeah, so and on the heels of the Somerset case, the Americans between Delaware and Georgia are wondering, what does this mean to us? And they are being assured by the one agent that they have in London that this means that the British Empire is going to ultimately push toward abolition of slavery. And the agent over there is, of course, Benjamin Franklin. Now, the critics of the, for example, the 1619 Project are saying it's an overstatement to say that Somerset produced the American Revolution in all the colonies. That's true, but it did produce it between Delaware and Georgia, not because abolition was going to take place. And I think everyone agrees today that that was not going to be the outcome of the Somerset decision, even in Great Britain. It took Great Britain another 50 years to finally achieve complete abolition of slavery. But that wasn't the point. The point was, what was the perception by people like Washington and Jefferson and Madison? And they were being told in no uncertain terms by a man they trusted implicitly, Benjamin Franklin, that Great Britain is out to get your slaves. So they, this is happening in real time. And within 3 months of the Somerset decision, they are receiving private correspondence from Benjamin Franklin saying, you men had better start thinking about what you're going to do about the political climate in London, because they're bound and determined to end chattel slavery. And the only way you're going to get to keep your slaves and your homes and your families and your very lives is if you separate from the British Empire. Because the British Empire is not going to have chattel slavery. And so if you want to continue with chattel slavery, you have got to separate yourselves from the British Empire. So what were these men supposed to do? Say, yeah, we don't think that's true. No, they reacted. They said, oh, my God. And by the end of 1772, the first committee of correspondence is set up in Virginia. And that's when Franklin said, we've got them. We've got them. They're in a panic over there. This just rattles through the southern colonies. In fact, a lot of people are familiar with the first president of the Second Continental Congress, a man named John Hancock. But who succeeded him as president of the Second Continental Congress? It was a man named Henry Lawrence. What do we know about Henry Lawrence? Well, from Hamilton, we know he's the father of John Lawrence, who's in Hamilton. But more importantly, Henry Lawrence was the single biggest marketer of human trafficking of the 18th century. He ran the slave house in Charleston, South Carolina. And as soon as he realized that every enslaved person from South Carolina to Georgia was going to have Henry Lawrence in their crosshairs during the American Revolution, that's when he suddenly became a patriot. He had been a loyalist right up until 1774. And then all of a sudden, he's in the Second Continental Congress going, we've got to free ourselves from the British Empire. We've got to get ourselves out of this, because his very life is under threat now. And that's another story that has simply never been told. It's like, what's Henry Lawrence doing in this? That's what he's doing. So by 1775, we've got six colonies in the north that are upset with British quartering of soldiers and the presence of the British military in their everyday lives. We've got six colonies to the south that are very concerned about the institution of chattel slavery in their colonies and retaining their farms. And we've got one state right in the middle that we know today as the Keystone State, and that's Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And they've hidden that story. If you look at why they call Pennsylvania the Keystone State, to this day, they give you some sort of mumbo-jumbo that makes no sense at all. They are the Keystone State because Benjamin Franklin was holding the northern colonies and the southern colonies together. And even John Adams would later in his life say, if Benjamin Franklin had not been there for the Revolution and the Constitutional Convention, we would have had two United States of America.
Heavy. I didn't want to interrupt the story. Go back to 1772. You said the Committee of what?
Of Correspondence. These were committees that were formed by the various colonies to talk to the other colonies specifically. What are you guys thinking? What are you thinking? What are your concerns? What are your concerns? And they became known as committees of correspondence. And essentially what they are is their state departments for each colony.
And I was going to call
so
it penthouse.
There. And ultimately they're saying, we think we need to get out of the empire. Oh, well, that's kind of what we were thinking, is we need to get out of the empire. And so by 1773, there are committees of correspondence in every colony of all 13. It's like, I think we all think we need to get out of the colonies. And then ultimately, then the Boston Tea Party that triggers the Intolerable Acts, including shutting Boston Harbor and taking away the Northwest Territories so that the Americans could not speculate in land anymore. George III tells them they cannot settle anywhere west of the Appalachian Mountains. And George III is calling for the indigenous tribes to come and slaughter any settlers that are living beyond the Appalachian Mountains and to get rid of them and to take their due property rights to the Northwest Territories. So it's getting extremely ugly at that point. It's getting extremely violent already by 1774. By spring of 1775, of course, the wheels are rolling, and that's when Franklin returns to the United States, participates in the Second Continental Congress, and a lot of your audience will be able to at least pick up the story from there. But there are key incidents later in the book that many people still aren't aware of, such as the role of John Paul Jones. John Paul Jones is known as the father of the American Navy. To this day, if you go to Annapolis, you will see John Paul Jones, father of the American Navy. Ask any administrators at the U.S. Naval Academy, why is he the father of the American Navy? And they will not be able to give you an articulate answer. It's in the book.
Oh, come on. Tell me.
Okay. In a nutshell, John Paul Jones was born John Paul. He was from Scotland. And during his time in the British Royal Navy, he either accidentally or probably involuntarily killed two British sailors, one for trying to start a mutiny, and he stabs him to death. And the other one, he was punishing him, and he just had him, they kept beating him until the man died. And because of that, John Paul had a price on his head. So his brother was living in Fredericksburg, Virginia. So John Paul moves to Fredericksburg, Virginia, and gets away from Great Britain and adds Jones to the back of his name. So now he's no longer John Paul. He's John Paul Jones. But he's a pirate. That's what he does for a living. They did a thing called privateering where you could hire a pirate ship if you were the British government to go attack French ships. And if you were the French government, you could hire pirate ships to go attack British ships. They just kind of mess with people's heads. So he's essentially a professional pirate. And he goes and enlists with the American Navy, and they say, well, this is okay. But then he can't decide ultimately when he takes over British ships and American ships, and whose goods are these? And, well, this is all my stuff. And the American government saying, no, you need to give this to the American government. He said, no, this is my stuff. So they finally get weary of him, and they send him to France because they're hoping that Benjamin Franklin can find something to do with him. And Franklin says, oh, I've got all kinds of fun things I can do with this man. And so he gets John Paul Jones outfitted with a new ship that is called the Bonhomme Richard. I don't know whether you're familiar with, whether your audience shouldn't at least know this story of the Bonhomme Richard versus the British ship Serapis, because that's where we get the "I have not yet begun to fight." That was his famous quote. But what he does is he begins harassing the British ships around Great Britain. You know, up until that time, the United States never took the war back to Great Britain. It was all about fighting in the American colonies. And Franklin says, what happens if we take the war to Great Britain? And so he charges John Paul Jones. He said, here's what I want you to do. I just want you to keep sailing around England and Wales and Scotland. And whenever you see a group of ships that looks like they're poorly defended, just shell them for a while. Just, you know, just shoot your cannons at them, you know, sink a couple of them and then move on. And go to the smaller ports in Scotland and just shell their ports for a while and destroy some of their wharves and then move on. And so John Paul Jones keeps sailing around the island doing this at random, and it is absolutely terrifying the British that there's an invasion coming from France and Spain to attack the British mainland. What is their response? They immediately pull all the ships back from North America. It's like, okay, all the warships were blockading. You guys got to come back here and defend the motherland. Blockade's gone. Thank you, Benjamin Franklin. And it sounds like a sophomoric silliness, but it worked. The Lord Admiral of the British Navy was a fellow named Lord Sandwich, Sandwich Islands and the Lunch and Entree, both named after this same Lord Sandwich. He said in Parliament, he said, the single greatest enemy of the British Empire is sitting in this gallery today, and he pointed right at Benjamin Franklin. He was absolutely paranoid, terrified of Benjamin Franklin, and he knew that Franklin was in Paris, and he knew that Franklin was directing all these ships to attack the British mainland, and he was absolutely certain that a big invasion was coming. So that's when the Lord Admiral of the British Navy pulls all the ships back from North America.
What year was that?
That was between 1778 and 1780. The story of the I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, the ship, the Bonhomme Richard, and if you can't translate that into English, it means the Poor Richard. What does that tell you? It's named after Benjamin Franklin's most famous fictional character. It's named after Poor Richard's almanac. So he names his ship, the Bonhomme Richard, after Poor Richard. In its maiden voyage, it actually goes down in combat against the Serapis. So that means that the Americans have to board Serapis, and ultimately they defeat the crew, and they take Serapis. Now, Benjamin Franklin has told John Paul Jones, if you get disabled, do not bring the ship back to France. Bring it to the Netherlands. Bring it to Amsterdam. And John Paul Jones isn't really sure why he's been told this by Franklin, but that's what he does. And he takes it to Amsterdam for rehabilitation. Well, right at that point, the French and the British are arguing about loyalties of the Netherlands. And it is at that point that the Netherlands sides with John Paul Jones, agrees to re-outfit his ship, declares war on Great Britain, and so they join France in the war. That was the second country after France to recognize the United States as a free and sovereign nation. It was because John Paul Jones took his disabled ship to Amsterdam. Thank you, Benjamin Franklin.
God, gosh almighty, if there was one person who was stirring the stew, it was definitely Benjamin Franklin.
There is not a story in the American Revolution that does not have the imprimatur of Benjamin Franklin on it. Not a one. We spend some time in the book about Saratoga. We spend time with Yorktown. All of those things have Benjamin Franklin's paw prints all over them.
What's interesting, and I'm so happy that you're sharing all this, is that we all know the name Benjamin Franklin. We know about the kite. We know about the stove, maybe the glasses, and some of the things that he wrote. But when you think of heroes of the American Revolution, in my mindset, he's not there on that list.
Correct.
I mean, you'll think of George Washington, of course. You'll think of others. But you won't think of this possibly doddering old man who spends 25, 30 years of his life in Europe. But he is so bright. He is so influential, connected, and he sees the game better than anyone. That's what I'm learning about Benjamin Franklin.
Yes. It is not an accident that he is the only American that signs the Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, the Peace of Paris, and the peace with France. That is not an accident. That happened because Franklin had his fingers in all of it. He wasn't just there as a nice old man, here, sign this. He was the guy that authored all those documents.
Which documents did he author?
He was the one that edited the Declaration of Independence for Jefferson. People say, well, Jefferson wrote it because he was a better writer than Adams and Franklin. Well, nonsense. That's a bunch of bourgeois. There's no way. You know, Franklin and Adams made their living at writing. Jefferson right. certainly didn't. The reason Jefferson was picked was because the other four members of that committee were all from the North, and they needed Jefferson to articulate in a way that was acceptable to the slave owners why they were all 13 colonies were going to war. So Franklin said, yes, but I need to look at your document after you finish it. And Jefferson had pretty much copied George Mason's Declaration of Virginia Rights that George Mason had written 2 weeks ahead of the American Declaration of Independence. And so Jefferson was pretty much plagiarizing the whole document, including we hold these truths to be self-evident. That all comes from George Mason, not Thomas Jefferson. And essentially, what Franklin wrote was, it was originally said, we hold these truths to be sacred. And Franklin, being a deist, almost to the point of atheist, said, no, he scratched that out. And he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, which is what he got from the Scottish Enlightenment.
Right.
So he was quoting David Hume there. And, it's, you know, these are stories that we don't know.
Well, we do now.
Yes. Thank you, Pauline Meyer, for providing that documentation.
No, this has just been fabulous. It just shows that, and we have less than a minute to go. So please promote yourself and your book.
Sure. The easiest way to reach it, it's Somerset with two T's on the end, but if you go to Phil Goodrich Author, that's philgoodrichauthor.com. You can link to the book, and there's some great little blogs in there as well that I've produced over the past year that are going to give you much more in-depth information as to the cast of characters and what you're going to find in the book.
Thank you.
Right now it's in audio, end of the year. It'll be back in print. Sorry.
Beautiful. Thank you, Philip, for being on the show. I like to end my shows by saying to all you good people out there, all you defenders and lovers of liberty, freedom, rights, individuality, equality of opportunity for all. To all you patriots out there, you know who you are. Till next time, may you be and stay safe and well. Patriot out.
Heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.